Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Sound healthcare decisions are part of good financial planning. The Classic Business Health and Wellness feature is proud to partner with MedShield Medical Scheme, your trusted partner for life. Welcome back to Classic Business here on Fine Music Radio, your calm in the chaos. Speaking of chaos, we see a fresh legal challenge to the National Health Insurance Act. It now, I think at last count, means there are 7 legal challenges, numerous unanswered questions and a chorus of concern, particularly from those who live and breathe the numbers. So tonight we're going to take a clinical lens to the NHI, focusing not on ideology, but on affordability, actuarial soundness and system design. Joining me is one of South Africa's foremost healthcare actuaries, Barry Childs, joint CEO of Insight Actuaries and Consultants. Barry has worked on everything from risk equalization to supply-side modeling and value-based care. So if anyone can help us understand whether NHI is financially viable and what universal healthcare should really look like, it's him. Barry, welcome to the show. Let's just start with the burning question. Based on your modeling, what is the realistic per capita cost of delivering universal healthcare at the levels promised under the NHI Act?
Thanks for having me on the show, Michael. Starting with the big questions, it's really hard to say. It's hard to say what the per capita cost will be without much greater clarity on the on what benefits are going to be offered to whom and over what period of time. The approach that's being followed at the moment is to say there's enough money in the system overall and we'll provide as much benefit as we can within that overall expenditure in the system. So very hard to say what per capita cost should be. Anyone who tells you, what they think the number will be is going to be wrong.
And why is that? Just because we don't know exactly what is going to be covered yet under NHI. What makes modeling at this stage so difficult?
Yes, absolutely. So, in order to figure out what something's going to cost, you need to know what's provided. If we know what the different prices of cars are or grocery bills or all of those kind of things because we know what we're buying. And the NHI, there's not yet the detail that needs to be provided in terms of what benefits will be provided. We do expect that will come over time with regulations. But without that detail, it's very difficult to say what the overall system will cost or what the budget will be.
And that's why, we've seen from various analysts the estimates ranging from hundreds of billions to potentially even a trillion rand. How would that be funded?
Yes. So just on those, before I get to the funding, on those costs, that's exactly right. That's why without knowing, it's impossible to estimate. So, some of the extraordinarily high estimates are not useful in and of themselves either because they require, an enormous amount of assumptions that go into that. And those assumptions are difficult to inform without greater clarity. So we're all waiting for more clarity on what will be in there. But coming to your question on how it will be funded, it will be funded through taxation. So that's how the public system is funded at the moment. And the NHI will essentially over time take over that, will appropriate, to use the word, the general taxation going towards the healthcare budget. And as they want to expand coverage for more people and for more benefits, then more tax will be needed. So it's a tax-funded system.
And, that then could be a range of, say, payroll taxes on employers. You could have personal income tax surcharges, potentially a VAT increase, although, we saw how difficult that was to get through given the furore around the budget earlier this year. When you look at the system design that we currently have, you've worked extensively on system design. In your view, what would a well-designed hybrid model of universal healthcare look like, one that blends the best of the private and public capacity effectively?
Yeah, so absolutely. There's been some good work done on overall system design. At the moment, our system is far too fragmented in terms of the split between public and private. We should have a model where the public purchaser of healthcare, that the national department and provincial departments of health, should be able to much more easily purchase services from private sector providers. At the moment, that's very difficult. And vice versa, medical aides and health insurers should be able to purchase services from public providers. But again, that's at the moment incredibly difficult and has in fact been stifled and interfered with. That's made that very difficult. So we need a system that has a much more integrated design, both from a funding point of view, the way that the tax works, the medical tax credits, and the way that tax funds are used for public health, needs to be designed in a much more integrated fashion. And there are good models for this. I mean, some of the research in the Taylor Commission and similar research laid the pathway for what those kind of models would look like. It is a multi-fund model. So, I mean, and that's sort of one of the resistance points on NHI, which, you know, which is supposed to be one fund for everybody. In my view, a multi-fund model de-risks things. So there's still some choice and not a single point of failure. And, you know, if there's service failure in one area, people can then go to another fund. But also an integrated design would allow proper and effective competition between public and private funds. It's nothing that would keep the private sector more honest in terms of cost efficiency than having an effective competitor in the state. But at the moment, that's not the case. So, yeah, lots more work, I think, could be done on thinking about how the systems could be designed to work together more effectively.
And, you know, on that point of the difference, and we're seeing this ideological resistance to multi-funded models versus a single-funded system, globally, we do see the multi-funder model as the norm. From a systems perspective, why does a single-funder system carry execution risk, especially in South Africa?
Well, I think that, you know, the challenge is both ideological and practical. On the one hand, we have a very unequal society. And it's very appealing to say, you know, everybody should be on a level footing and, you know, you shouldn't have a system where your access to healthcare depends on your income and your ability to purchase private cover. But you could extend that argument to every line of society. You know, is it fair that people have different access to food? Is it fair that people have different access to housing? And no, it's not fair at all. So ideologically, you know, I think you would find a lot of resonance with those views. But we are do have practical and pragmatic limitations in what we're able to do, given the tax base, given the employment base, given the high levels of unemployment. And so, you know, for developing economies like ours, the general thinking is that those that can afford to look after themselves, whether it's for retirement funding, other social security, for medical funding, et cetera, should pool resources amongst themselves and continue to pay taxes that go towards those that can't, which is sort of the model that we have now. Now, it's not working well. I mean, the private sector needs a lot of work. It needs lots of regulatory reform to improve and to be more sustainable. But to put everything in one pot just to equal it out seems to me to, while, you know, I can understand the ideology and even the idea of efficiency, you know, saving on administration costs and, you know, efficiencies from purchasing at scale. But we just don't have a good track record there. And so, you know, for me, if we're going to be putting more money into that bucket, I think we have a lot of credibility to build within South Africa and for the public overall to say, you know, if you trust us with a little, then, you know, we can be trusted with more. But I think we have some trust issues to overcome there still.
And, you know, and it's, you know, on the evidence, the provincial departments of health have been hotbeds of corruption. Babita Deokaran, who was gunned down, remains a kind of symbol, a powerful symbol of that. When we come to the infrastructure and the capacity constraints, I think one issue really quantified in policy discussions is infrastructure bottlenecks. Where do you see the most acute supply constraints in public healthcare, and can financing alone fix them?
I mean, the financing and the infrastructure go together. So in that regard, the public sector is quite complicated in how Department of Public Works and Department of Health work together, both, you know, the infrastructure and the labor side of things. But the question of whether we have enough beds, whether we have enough human resources for health are very big questions. Are they in the right places? Are they deployed to the right regions? Even these are contentious issues. I mean, you would have followed the certificate of need debate and all of those things. So these are emblematic of the difficulty in health debates in general. These are difficult problems to solve. Do we need more public hospital beds? Yes, I think we do. Speak to anyone working in the public sector and they'll tell you, you know, there are still patients in the corridors and patients in, you know, chairs instead of in beds. So we definitely need more public sector beds, or we need a way to effectively and efficiently procure the excess capacity in private hospital beds.
Yeah.
Again, it comes back to that overall system of design. We could be making better use of the overall infrastructure and human resources we have, but we have this artificial divide between public and private sectors, which makes it difficult.
And if we come back to the Health Market Inquiry, pointed to over-servicing and price opacity and a kind of low value for money. So if we simply implemented the Health Market Inquiry reforms like risk adjustments and base benefits and supply-side regulation, how far would that take us toward a more functional and integrated system then between the public and private sector?
On its own, that wouldn't solve the overall integrated problems between the public and private sectors. I mean, the Health Market Inquiry was aimed very specifically in a confined way at some needed reforms in the private sector, which we've known we've needed for 25 years. And this just sort of shone a spotlight on the need for those and the effect that those would have. I mean, there are many problems there. There is fraud. It's not only the public sector that is affected by fraud. There's definitely fraud in the private sector. There's waste. Some of the reforms would improve incentives in the system to focus on the right things. So risk equalization, for example, would stop funds focusing on, you know, selecting, trying to attract the right profile of lives and would focus more attention on efficiency. There needs to be better quality measurement. There needs to be a whole range of reforms in the private sector. You know, in my view, it hasn't been given its fair chance over the last 20, 25 years. It's had this regulatory deficit that needs to be caught up. But further work would need to be done beyond even the HMI's recommendations if the systems are to be integrated.
Looking at overall and building on what we've already discussed, if you were to be advising government at this stage on the likelihood of an NHI succeeding, what would your advice to the Minister of Health be? Because there's so many red flags that have been raised, and the minister does seem determined to press ahead.
There's a good sort of imagery about a stepladder, and if you make the steps in the stepladder too broad, it's impossible to climb. As opposed to, you know, being happy with taking smaller steps. I mean, in my view, that is the more pragmatic approach. I think I've not been shy in saying, I think, you know, as much as I can resonate with the ideal of wanting a more equitable system, the path that this particular path of NHI, the single funder, the, you know, upon full implementation, the crowding out of medical aids is what I would characterize as the path of most resistance rather than the path of least resistance. Now, I'm not saying, you know, you must give up on your values and just, you know, do what other people say is okay. You must fight where necessary. But I'm just worried that this reform, this particular reform, given the extent of the, so certainly the most legally challenged reform we've ever had, is just going to slow things down. And, you know, we're not going to make like pragmatic progress both in the public and the private sectors while we're trying to sort this mess out, just because it's seems to be a bridge too far to cross. I think there's lots that could be done in the interim, smaller incremental reforms, improving both sectors over time, rather than focus all of this energy on this one sort of big bang reform, which now, you know, we have to wait and see how the court cases are going to pan out.
Yeah, I think a very good analogy that. And, you know, if you're going to bring an industry with skilled professionals, specialists, nurses, doctors, infrastructure providers along this journey with you and take those steps along the ladder, you certainly can't do it in a way that is so challenged. You need the industry working alongside you. So, Barry Childs, we're going to have to leave it there. It is a concern now that we have 7 legal cases. And to an earlier comment that we had on a panel together on Business Day TV, it just creates a paralysis when really there should be a real sense of urgency. That was Barry Childs, Joint CEO of Insight Actuaries, bringing some much needed clarity to what is often a very noisy and politicized debate around NHI here on Classic Business. The Classic Business Health and Wellness feature is brought to you in partnership with MedShield Medical Scheme, your trusted healthcare partner for life. Join Classic Business and MedShield Medical Scheme next week for more insights on health and wellness.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.